on May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere.
What a wonderful day!
This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans. That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10th. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Hey readers, I'm excited to share this special episode called The Culture is Black Women with you. Tiffany Cross and I had the pleasure of hosting an honest, thought-provoking dinner conversation in Harlem with black women trailblazers who are shaping America's culture, including Nicole Hannah-Jones, Representative Ayanna Pressley, sportscaster Maria Taylor, and comedienne Robin Thede. I hope you enjoyed the discussions as much as I did. Stay right here to listen now.
We've had these conversations about the fight for our culture and the things that we know we need.
That is a universal black woman language.
We were all born knowing the work that needs to be done, and so we will do it.
Oh my God.
No.
Yes.
I'm excited to get you into Minton's. It's one of the most beautiful, incredible venues, Minton's in the Cecil. All of these women, they're going to be in Harlem. And I think that's going to be dope. Melba Wilson is a literal icon in Harlem, in New York, and her food is so delicious. And she's just a wonderful, warm, sweet person. So I'm excited just to be in her presence.
Who is better than you?
You.
That's right. That's only one of the reasons I love you.
I'm really excited for Nicole Hannah-Jones. She didn't get into this for fame. She didn't get into this to be the face of some movement. She got into this to bear witness to history and to tell a story.
Tarana Burke, the actual creator of the Me Too movement, the hashtag Me Too came from Tarana Burke. This is a woman who has suffered so much personal pain and tragedy and turned it into a movement.
So we have Maria Taylor, who is our new colleague.
We're here on Santa Monica Pier. And look, the fans are starting to trickle in.
Our new colleague. But do we not want the tea from ESPN? Because I do.
I am thrilled to have Captain Tamika Lindsay at the table because all walks of life, we are representing and making history.
It's interesting that she'll be there along with Representative Ayanna Pressley. The Crown Act is her crowning glory. I think she's going to be somebody that's going to be an incredible person to talk with.
Black ladies, get chill. I am so excited to have Robin Thede.
My camera?
That's your camera, Coach.
She is hilarious. She is fun. And she's also a history maker, too. There are not that many black women in late night.
I'm so excited to have Ryan Michelle Bethe, who is launching a new show with NBC.
What are you trying to pull? Why are you trying to mess with me?
She's beautiful. She has natural hair. I love her hair. Every time I see it, I'm like, can I pull that hairstyle off? Tamika Tremaglio, the new executive director of the NBPA, National Basketball Players Association. The interesting thing about her is she really comes from that C-suite space. She worked for Deloitte before.
We're sitting at a table with people from so many different industries, walks of life. I want people to understand that that's how we can operate in the world, that you can operate and create these connections, not because you want to get ahead in your industry, but because you want to have that sisterhood and that sisterhood support.
Oh my God.
Look at this. This is amazing.
This is a table fit for queens.
It absolutely is. And can we talk about this very extravagant menu?
Seriously.
Melba
outdid herself. I think we should bring in the ladies, right?
Let's bring in the ladies.
Yeah.
Let's do it.
Hi.
Come on in. Yes.
So, Joy, I'm curious because this is your hood.
Yeah.
So tell us about this wonderful, beautiful place.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, because I mean, we live in Harlem, even though I am a Brooklyn girl, and I'm always going to represent Brooklyn. I'm sorry to the Bronx, but I'm always going to represent Brooklyn.
Here we go.
East Flatbush till I die. But I'm just saying, Harlem obviously is so iconic, and it's so iconic to the Black experience.
Yeah.
And Black women, you know, you're talking about Billie Holiday and all the great Black women jazz artists who used to play right here. So we wanted to make this not just a sisterhood experience, but also a cultural experience, because this is the culture is, right?
Yeah.
And the culture is Black women. We've created the cultural basis for what Americans believe is culture, right?
Yeah.
Jazz, the blues, you know, all the things that we brought because of our experience, because of who we are. We brought that to the table, and so we wanted to bring that to this table.
I love that. I love that. Well, I feel the spirit of Black women in this room, but I do have to start this dinner out by just paying homage to the wonderful, amazing Nicole Hannah Jones.
Yes.
Seriously, take your flowers, because the way that you crystallize our lived experience in this country, our history, and you are unapologetic. We love our flair, we love your flair, and you celebrate it, and it's all rooted in history. And so I think it's really provided context for people who didn't know the story of 1619. Our entire genetic identity was robbed and taken from us. And you stood in that gap and said, let me tell you your story and where you come from.
Oh, man, thank you. I wasn't expecting that. And it's like so beautiful to be at the table with all of these amazing Black women who are clearly representing all of the different ways that we shape our society and culture, and also all the ways that we fight. But to me, when I think about us, our primary role is when we have been the keepers of Black culture, and that we have also been the ones who have fought for this country's highest ideals the most. We have fought for gender equality, for racial equality. If anyone ever followed our path, like, you think of all the stereotypes of Black women and that we are seen as a problem in this country. But of course, I argue that we're the solution, and we always have been.
Right. I mean, and you're sitting right next to the great Congresswoman Ayanna Pressley. And I mean, we've had these conversations. I think all of us we've had them separately with you about the fight, right? To fight for our culture and the things that we know we need. And we are kind of the canary in the coal mine for when America is going wrong.
I mean, I think that the unique space and dichotomy that we hold as Black women is that we are both hyper-visible in a way that our hair, our bodies, our humanity is criminalized simply for how we show up in the world, while also hyper-invisible, which is why you can have things like a Black maternal morbidity crisis. Mm-hmm. So what I try to do is to really deliver a love letter in word and deed to the most important Black woman in my life. May she rest in peace and power, and that's my mother. You know, she never read me children's bedtime stories about princesses being saved. She read me the speeches of Barbara Jordan and Shirley Chisholm. And she told me early on, you know, to be Black is a beautiful thing, something you should be proud of, but you're being born into a struggle.
I find it fascinating that you kind of embody the spirit of Shirley Chisholm and literally occupy her office.
I'm in her office.
On Capitol Hill.
Okay, so now I get to claim that borough pride that everybody was like, okay, Brooklyn.
I think we need to have one more vegan.
I'm thrilled to have Tarana Burke at the table because I think what we carry with us as Black women is also trauma, generational trauma. And it kind of speaks to our history as well, that you spoke about your trauma and other people came along and got credit for it.
And still do.
And still do. And still do.
As she sips her water.
Exactly. That is a universal Black woman language, and still does.
For people who define this movement by how the media framed it, you will never find us there. Before Me Too became the hashtag and all the rest of that, there was decades, go all the way back to Rosa Parks, and even before that, there was work that was being done by Black women and other marginalized women that predates me. And nobody was thinking about us at all. And I have said since the day I was elevated into the national scene, the international scene, this is for us. But people didn't want to hear that.
Mm-hmm. I look at this table and these amazing women sitting across this table, and I know everybody has earned their right to be here, you know, beautifully placed at this table. And still somebody can come in here and question our place at this table. Mm-hmm. So with that, I'd like to bring in Maria Taylor to the conversation.
Yes.
Because, young sister, we know that you earned your place, despite what others may say, and you're in a male-dominated field that is difficult for women to get into. So the expectation might be that as another woman, you understand what I went through. Yet we see that it takes Black women sometimes to appreciate you. And so I'm just curious, because you've been in the line of fire, and we didn't know you, but we knew you. We knew your story.
You
were our sister immediately. So how have you managed being in that line of fire and handle it with such grace and success?
Honestly, I'm sitting here and I'm like taking it all in. I'm like, I want to take notes. I'm like, Nicole Hannah Jones is speaking. Tarana Burke is speaking. But the thing that keeps coming to my mind is like, I just wish that there was a world in which, you know, everything that a Black woman did, someone wasn't coming to dim that light or blow it out. Like, I wish that there was someone there fanning our flames. And obviously we have our culture and we have people and friends and grandmas and moms that do that. But the things that we have to battle through sometimes, it's like trying to hold your little candle against like the winds of the ocean. And I felt that way sometimes coming up in sports, because like you said, it's very white male dominated. A lot of times they simply don't want you there. And I've been on both sides of it, where I've worked really hard to get to, you know, the NBA finals, and I've had a white woman raise her hand and say, you only got the job because you're Black. I've had my company stand behind that thought and then tell me that I am not being professional because I am refusing to work with her.
Wow.
But at some point I've realized, and I turned 35 in May, I was willing to give up my entire job. I said, I really have to walk in my integrity right now. I believe that I was put on this earth to speak out loud about sports, eventually more things, and be a content creator that amplifies Black voices. That's it.
Yeah.
And so if anyone tries to get away or push me off of that path, I believe God will have another one for me. And I think as Black women, everything we do is super selfless. So I think everyone sitting here has something that's been pushing them that has nothing to do with what they actually do.
Yeah.
Captain Lindsay, you were at the Naval Academy, but it wasn't just about you being a captain in the Navy. You meant something more, and we all know that that rides on our shoulders.
That's right.
I would be curious to hear what you were driven by, because talk about white male domination.
Okay,
come on now. Come on.
Let's talk about it in the Navy.
Yeah.
5 minutes though, okay?
Just very quickly, we'd like to welcome Chef Melba.
Melba! Ladies, how are you?
Oh, wonderful.
Oh my God, look at all the beauty, the brains sitting at one table. I want to honor you ladies by bringing you some of my favorite things. I am not going to tell you what everything's going to be, but we do have my Mandarin chicken salad, and I also have what I served the Duke and Duchess. Yes, they did come to Harlem.
Wow.
And yes, Sister Girl did serve them.
Come on, Megan Markle.
And girl, you know I had to throw some grits up in there.
You know that. Right?
Last but not least, some sweets for the sweets. Mm-hmm. Bon appetit, ladies. It is my honor and my pleasure to cook and serve you. Enjoy.
We love you, Melba.
Thank you. Enjoy.
Captain Lindsay, would love to hear your thoughts to Maria's question.
Mm-hmm. You know, I remember being a student at the Naval Academy, and I was in charge of the climate assessment, and I remember a peer of mine saying in his feedback that if you were Black and female, you had it made. And I didn't see that at all, considering there were 4 in my class of 1,000, almost 1,200, and 1 in the class behind me, and 7 in the class behind that one. So how could they think that we had it made? When I was asked to come back, and just I was curious to see if anything had changed. And there were some things that changed, but there were a lot of things that hadn't. And I didn't realize the importance of my role as chief diversity officer there until 2 Black midshipmen, students, came to my office and said, we don't have a voice. And it really hurt me to hear that. And I realized that it was my responsibility as senior officer and soon to be the senior Black female in the Navy But I had to be their voice.
Well, we just want to thank you for your service.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Tamika, we're looking right at you, because if you're talking about a male-dominated industry, I think at this end of the table, I mean, my God, the NBA, it is a completely obviously male-dominated industry. I wonder what your sort of challenges have been, you know, being a Black woman in that space.
Yeah, so it has been, first of all, an incredible privilege, because as you talk about being in this male-dominated industry, the players that I have the privilege of working on behalf of are the most amazing men, other than my husband and children. Right? We think about the future of basketball. We know that a lot of it will be around social equity. They had one of the loudest voices. They made the biggest difference, whether it was in voting, whether it was, you know, taking a stand, whatever that happens to be. And I am just amazed to be a part of that, recognizing, of course, that it is male-dominated, so yeah. It is a unique business to be in.
It's like we're breaking into all these spaces, and it is incredible the way that we're breaking in, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking about you, sister. I mean, there is nothing whiter and maler than the comedy world.
Yeah, correct.
It's a lonely, lonely world to be a Black woman there.
Yeah.
And
that's the end.
That's it. Thank y'all for coming.
Yeah. Thank you. Good night.
Good night.
For a lot of people, I was a... Ryan, put it down. I am trying to talk about being a great Black woman.
Get your cabin.
Oh, Lord. A hole.
It's got a hole.
Somebody take the grass of chicken. The grass of chicken.
It's catfish. It's catfish.
It's catfish.
It's catfish. It's
catfish. The catfish grass. Yes. I am a very white male dominated industry. Yeah, because I started, for many, many years, I was a journeyman writer and comedian that no one knew and wrote for a lot of men. A lot of Black men, but a lot of white men, a lot of people that you never know I was writing jokes for. And I was having trouble getting my voice out there, you know. So for me, Larry Wilmore was actually really helpful with that. When I did The Nightly Show, I was hired to be his head writer. And he said, no, you need to be on camera. We need to hear your voice. I can't speak to the things that you're going to speak to.
Robin, you're at headquarters?
That's right, Larry.
Which headquarters?
Black headquarters.
Oh.
It's so critical to be recognized by our own. Mm-hmm. Because when someone comes up to me and say, oh, I love your sketch show, I say, thank you, because I made it for you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
I made it for you. Mm-hmm. And that's not some sort of weird compliment. It's just like, I literally I named it a Black lady sketch show.
Yeah.
There's no confusion who this is for or who it's by.
Yeah.
All of us have been grinding. I think about Gabrielle, I think about Ryan. Oh, my God, we'll talk about all of your
So, Ryan, I mean, Robin gave you a... Annie up there, I'm just curious your experience as a Black woman in Hollywood, what that's been like for you.
Well, I know we said this is going to be an honest conversation, I do want to keep my corporate overload towards happy. So,
mine don't care. They do whatever hire.
Yes, because yours are like a subscription base, and mine is network television, and it's a whole nother thing. Child, if they could get me to cook, clean, and drive the bus to work,
and we do it.
And we do it.
We do it. We do it. And, you know, I actually have to say something deeply personal, because not only are we birthday twins.
Yes, we are.
Robin and I had lunch. Now I want to cry. Robin and I had lunch.
Don't start.
It was a number of years ago.
It was 75 years ago.
It felt 75 years ago. Yeah. And it felt like we were children.
Yep.
And I don't know about you, but it just felt like this mountain. It was a bad day for me, and I was climbing up the mountain. And this light came in, and she was like, we're climbing up the mountain. And what we're going to do is we're going to be funny about it, and we're going to be fabulous. And what I want to do is I'm going to have a sketch show, because, you know, the sketch comedy space. And I'm just like, I just had an audition for another slave. You know? And it was like, it's that moment that we had has stayed with me.
When I met you, your husband was just a lovely, no, he wasn't. He was a wonderful man, but it was like, but I don't know. And you know what? I'm not going to bring that up. But
bring it up.
But I feel like Sterling is incredible. First of all, as a human being, as an actor. But I feel like it's difficult for Black women to get the same amount of shine. Is that something that you all discuss?
We do. I mean, I say to him, I told him once, I was like, Black women stand alone.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I was like, and as much as you love me and have loved me, I have stood alone. He'll joke now and that something will happen. He's like, because Black women stand alone.
Yes, we do.
We do. I said, you have no idea like how lonely it is sometimes.
My mother would say to me, Kamala, you may be the first to do many things. Make sure you're not the last.
I keep hearing that just showing up as a Black woman, as yourself, is just revolutionary.
I wear this hair for a reason. It makes white supremacists so damn mad.
Today and every day, Planned Parenthood is committed to ensuring that everyone has the information and resources they need to make their own decisions about their bodies, including abortion care. Lawmakers who oppose abortion are attacking Planned Parenthood, which means affordable, high-quality, basic health care for more than 2 million people is at stake. The right to control our bodies and get the health care we need has been stolen from us. And now, politicians in nearly every state have introduced bills that would block people from getting the sexual and reproductive care they need. Planned Parenthood believes everyone deserves health care. It's a human right. That's why they fight every day to push for common sense policies that protect our right to control our own bodies and against policies that interfere with decisions between patients and their doctor. Planned Parenthood needs your support now more than ever. With supporters like you, we can reclaim our rights and protect and expand access to abortion care. Visit PlannedParenthood.org/future. That's PlannedParenthood.org/future.
Can we talk about hair and makeup?
Yeah.
You have beautiful hair. Hey! Okay, come on now. Look, can we toast to this?
The hair and the makeup.
I'm sure we have all been in the struggle.
Seriously. All the Black creators.
How do we get our hair and makeup together? Back in the news business, your beautiful hair would not have been allowed even 5 years ago.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I went renegade last year and started wearing every kind of braid style that you could possibly do.
We know this.
I'm 100%
every man.
And you know when I did it? I'm going to tell you when I did it. When I did it, when that Crown Act passed in New York, I'm going to wear all the different kinds of braids.
Yeah.
I'm going to put them up. I'm going to put them down.
Let somebody say something.
You went, put you it went in writing. More than rogue, though.
I went rogue.
One day, Joy had a whole situation. And this is how it always works, right? People text like, yo, did you see Joy's hair today?
Literally. Yeah. I worked on a show, and that person shall remain nameless, but they are very famous. And he had it in his contract that if you were a Black woman, he was not responsible for your hair. Mm-hmm. And this was a very famous.
Who was it? Tell us.
I cannot
name name.
Because he's too powerful.
Just text it to us later.
Tell us later.
But for all of you, I mean, in every single one of our businesses, we've had to deal with our hair being fried, falling out of our hair.
Oh my God, yeah.
To somebody who didn't know how to do us.
Yeah.
Couldn't sit in the thing. We couldn't have a Black hair and makeup team.
Foundations, two shades lighter.
Darker.
Ashy.
Right.
When you're not a celebrity in this way, this is a new thing being thrust into the spotlight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So when you're like a social justice person, and they don't care how they make us look.
Correct.
At
Correct.
All.
Correct.
I have been in places where they've just handed me powder.
And probably the wrong color powder.
Oh, absolutely. Right. White powder. And I'm like, am I a clown?
And so now you have to be a professional makeup artist, professional hairstylist.
You already know this. I go on TV and I'm like, I look a damn mess. Like, what
have been traumatized?
And I'm supposed to have hair, and the hair is like that, and they done. And I'm like, what?
From 4 years ago?
That's right.
I'm going to tell you this. The time cover, I've never told a story.
Mm.
They called me 3 days before and said, can you come in to do a photo shoot? They did not tell me it was the cover. They said, bring a yellow shirt and a blue shirt out of my closet.
Wow. Mm.
No wardrobe, no nothing. So I grabbed the yellow shirt, I grabbed the blue shirt. I came downtown.
Oh, Lord.
I came to the place, right? Okay. I'm just thinking it's going to be a little picture, like whatever. I get to the place, my braids wasn't fresh. Now, you know, come on. Come on, I had 3 days. I could have took my braids out.
Okay.
My braids wasn't fresh. My braids was always fresh.
Oh, yes.
Oh, I would have freshed them myself.
Right.
I get to the place. I get there. I just take the shoot like normal. They make this the cover of freaking Time magazine.
But, Tarana, can I just say, though, I think what I think people misunderstand is that this is not
vanity.
It's not a diva moment. It's the fact that as Black women, every single thing about us is politicized and criminalized.
That's right.
As we were having this conversation about Black hair And I know everyone keeps saying that we're in the midst of a national reckoning. You know, I'm still waiting for that. Mm-hmm. I think, yeah. honestly, what I think is more accurate is to say that we've been in the midst of an awakening.
Yeah. Right.
But the reckoning, for me, will be when we codify the value of Black lives yeah. in our budgets and in our policies.
That part. Okay.
And so, you know, we recently passed the Crown Act.
Yep.
This is banning race-based... those applause are for the fact that I was able to keep my composure for the many offensive things that were said. A person across the aisle referred to this as the bad hair bill, you know, which very much makes the case for the very thing that we're talking about. So the thing is that people get it wrong when they think that the Crown Act is just about hair. The Crown Act is about white supremacy. How I show up in the world is disruptive in and of itself. You know, shout out to the 7 million people living with alopecia, disproportionately Black women. I have alopecia totalis, and, you know, I thank God for my husband, who in the midst of that, all that loss, reminded me that I don't need hair to rock a crown.
Yes.
I made my daughter, my 11-year-old daughter, watch that video when you talked about why you made that decision, because that was just so, I do feel emotional, so powerful for us.
My twists have become such a synonymous and conflated part of not only my personal identity and how I show up in the world, but my political brand. That's why I think it's important that I'm transparent about this new normal and living with alopecia.
I wear this hair for a reason. It makes white supremacists so damn mad. Listen, they don't think somebody like this should work at the New York Times or be on television. Right. Mm-hmm. And every time I go and speak at a college, when Black girls are like, I didn't know I could be successful and wear my hair I wanted. What other race of people? Is it okay to say the way your hair grows out of your head is offensive to me?
Yes.
Well, and I've grown up in the corporate world, so 26 years in the corporate space, it wasn't even a matter of someone telling you, it was that you didn't see it, right? Mm-hmm. And so in order to be successful, you thought this is how you had to come. It wasn't that someone said it, it's just what you thought. So thank God there were people who would show up so that it allowed you to show up, right? Yeah. Because until you could see other people that wore flowers in their hair or colors or bigger jewelry, whatever that happened to be, you didn't feel like you could do it because that wasn't the people who made it. A lot of what we really are encountering every day is that people don't feel heard. They want us to listen. And it's hard for us to do that because we're always at such odds. Yeah.
So, Maria, please, I want to hear about your hair. Your hair looks beautiful. Your hair looks amazing. I love this hair.
Yes, it does.
But really what I wanted to say, I keep hearing that just showing up as a Black woman, as yourself, is just revolutionary. You know what I mean? Like you kept saying, I'm a disruptor just by being there and standing there. And I feel the same way all the time. Like, you're tall, I'm tall. Everyone's going to look at you regardless, and they're going to judge you. But I just went through a big chop, and I watched your video, too. You were an inspiration to me. And I had always worn long wigs, had taken out my edges, I have like a patch in the back of my head just from traction alopecia. And I finally decided, you know, I need to start staying a little bit truer to myself. I don't want to hide anymore in myself. You said something similar to that too, where I just want to get rid of all the layers and just see who I am and who I can function as on camera. And I think I had always been prepping myself and making myself up for the white male gaze, because that's what sports is. That's what, if you're covering football, the expectation is. So I'm thinking my hair has to be long. It has to be down to here. And one day I showed up and was like, no, I'm about to do the Winter Olympics and I'm going to cut all my hair off and it's going to be razored on the side and whatever's there will be there and whatever's not is not going to show up on camera. But it was scary. To bear your whole self on camera and be a Black woman is scary and hard.
Yeah. Well, let's just talk about the life that that hair is giving us.
Honestly, it's so gorgeous. I love your hair.
Thank you.
That is part of the sisterhood of us, is that we know that we are opening the door and then we need to widen it a bit.
I have a fantastic life. Why would I ruin it with a man?
Just coming up here, it changed what I was going to ask. It is resonant for me to be on Air Force Two with the first Black woman vice president. That is a big deal. And where we're headed makes it even more resonant. We're headed, of all the places we're going to the Mississippi Delta.
Greenville, Mississippi.
To Greenville, Mississippi.
Right.
You know, and just is it resonant for you that that is where we're going today? And why? Why are we going to Greenville? And why is that important?
Well, it's very intentional. One of the things that I've been working on since we came in as an administration, and it's really a passion of mine, is what can we do to support small businesses and small business owners? Because we know in so many of our communities, in the Black community, Latino community, Asian community, rural communities, the small business leaders are civic leaders, they're community leaders, and they're really the backbone of the economy of those communities.
These rural communities do not get a lot of political attention. Let's just be honest. We pay a lot of attention to the big cities and the swing states.
Right.
We don't pay attention to rural communities.
Right.
So, I mean, I think that is important, obviously, in what you're doing. But Mississippi also has a history.
Yes,
you spoke of your Senate, what you did in the United States Senate. The Emmett Till Anti-Lynching Act has now passed.
That's right.
Can you just talk a little bit about what getting to that point means as well?
For too long, rural communities have been overlooked and underserved in very substantial ways. Rural communities have a lot in common among them, but there's also diversity among them. So we're going to the South. We're going to Mississippi. Or if you go to places like South Carolina, rural communities in certain regions of our country also have the history that you are rightly talking about. When we overlay that with the history on an issue like lynching, when we overlay that on a history that has been about racism, about discrimination, about slavery, you know, just there's so many layers to it, right? And so we're going to Greenville, Mississippi to recognize that this is part of who we are as America.
We all sat and watched the Ketanji Brown Jackson hearings, in which she very calmly sat through what I think a lot of, particularly Black women, let's just be honest, felt was brazen disrespect from senators like Lindsey Graham, senators like Tom Cotton, senators like Josh Hawley. What did you think when you watched that hearing?
I will tell you, Joy, I experienced great joy when I watched this brilliant, phenomenal Black woman, jurist, be so smart and just cut through the political gamesmanship that they were attempting to incite. And she just was composed. And as far as I'm concerned, was taking a whole lot of people to school. And I watched that with incredible joy, because it was just brilliance being displayed for the entire country to see. And I cannot wait to see. That will only be matched by the joy that I experience when I see her take the oath to be the next justice on the United States Supreme Court.
We started off today on your plane, Air Force Two, talking about firsts. You are a quintuple first. First woman, first Black woman, first Asian American woman, first HBCU grad.
Indeed.
And I have to say, first member of the Divine Nine.
Thank you very much.
Yes, to be Vice President of the United States. What does it say about our country that we have this duality, that we can have so many firsts, so many more potential firsts? Stacey Abrams running in Georgia, many Black women running for the United States
That's
Senate,
right.
Val Demings in Florida,
mm-hmm.
great candidates everywhere, Black women running.
That's right.
And so many opportunities for more firsts.
Yes.
And yet, we're living in a time when our rights are severely threatened, our right to vote, our right to bodily autonomy, yeah. bounties on women in Texas, you know, abortion restrictions, don't say gay laws. I could go on.
Yeah.
What does it say about our country that we live in that duality?
Pay equity.
Pay equity.
Yeah.
Maternal, you know, maternal mortality.
Right. Something I care deeply about that I've worked on for years. You know, here's how I think about it. First, on the point about being first, I think you've heard me say this. My mother would say to me, Kamala, you may be the first to do many things. Make sure you're not the last. And I know when I am with all of these incredible women who have been the first in many ways, that is part of the sisterhood of us, is that we know that we are opening the door and then we need to widen it a bit, and we will certainly not be the last. So I'll tell you that in terms of the spirit with which we approach it. And here's the thing. We also were all born knowing the work that needs to be done. And so we will do it. And we will speak truth about the injustice. We will speak truth about the inequity. We will speak truth about the unfairness. But we also know our power. And we're not going to let anyone take it from us. We understand the legitimacy of what we are fighting for, to say, let's deal with discrimination. Let's deal with the fact that black women are three times as likely to die in childbirth as other women, not to mention Native women twice as likely, not to mention rural women 1.5 times likely. We understand what needs to be done, and we are prepared to do it. And that's how I think about it. That's how I think about it. We have to speak truth about what it is. And then, you know, that I think that's why you see all these women taking these roles of leadership, because they're prepared to lead. And I think we'll all be better when they do.
Vice President Kamala Harris, I think we had similar moms.
Yes.
Your mom sounds a lot like my
mom.
Oh,
my mother was, at the shop?
Yeah.
Miss John's shop. So, you know, when we walked in, I was saying, my mother she would make dresses for us. My mother sewed clothes for us, mm-hmm. right? And I learned how to sew, too. And it was so nice because I just have fond memories as a girl of going to the fabric store with my mother, right? And then getting all of the fabrics.
My mom wanted me to learn to sew as well. I resisted.
My mother was like, you know, you want to wear clothes, you need to know how to sew. You like to eat, you need to learn how to cook.
I did learn the latter. Because I want to eat. Vice President Harris, thank you so
much. Thank you, Joy. It's good to be with you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Oh, my God.
No.
Yes.
I will say, honestly, it has always been a priority.
Tita.
From Freakonomics Radio, a new series about a role model we didn't know we needed.
So many crazy things really did happen to him.
The physicist Richard Feynman was one of the most brilliant scientists of his generation, but he was also a troublemaker, an obsessive, and a man who spoke truth to power. Along the way, he created a blueprint for how to lead a life of honest inquiry.
He was a brilliant theoretical physicist, but what really made him stand out was his humanity.
The curious, brilliant, vanishing Mr. Feynman on Freakonomics Radio.
On May 10th, Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes is coming to IMAX and theaters everywhere. This summer, one movie event will reign.
It is our time.
Apes hunt humans. That is wrong.
Bend for your king.
Never.
Kingdom of the Planet of the Apes. Only in theaters May 10. Tickets on sale now. Rated PG-13. Some material may be inappropriate for children under 13.
Captain Lindsay, I just wanted, because you were telling us a story about just the various ways that we're disrespected.
Yes.
And you are an accomplished woman in the military. Please that story.
I think my biggest story that I didn't share was my time in Baghdad, Iraq. So this was the end of General Brooks's time and the beginning of General Kimmett's time, so early 2003, 2004 timeframe. And I was in charge of communications at the time in Baghdad. And late one night, when it's time for them to air live, the communications broke. So they woke me up. I threw on some sweats, and I went running into the palace there in the green zone. And I said, there was a problem with communications. This was the situation. Here's how you're going to operate. This is, and I just laid it down in communication style. And there was a lieutenant colonel there from the Army who was just looking at me with this blank stare, and he says, what are you doing out of the kitchen?
Oh, my God.
No.
How? And it took everything out of me, the fact that I left my three-year-old and my one-year-old child to volunteer to go to fight for my country. It took everything from me that I fought for to be a military officer volunteering to fight for my country. It took everything out of me, and I was livid. I did not go off on him because that would only make matters worse. And so I went to a senior officer, and I told him I wanted to file a complaint against this guy because he had no right to say this against me. And he actually talked me out of it. So it only made matters worse because he did not speak for me. Mm. It was like a punch in the chest. And when I've encountered that more than once. That was probably the most egregious. But even as a captain, they'll say, oh, you don't act like other military officers, or you're not like other military captains, or you're not like other leaders. And I'm like, what does that define? What does that look like? Because obviously I don't fit that mold, but I am very much of that person. And I'm very much that person who's called on, like everybody else, to serve the job. So it has been tough to be able to assert that when there's so few of us who make it to the senior ranks.
As a Black woman, that story, I think, has us all a little choked up. I think something that we all feel is loneliness. Yeah. You know, these rooms that we're in can be so lonely. And some of us at this table are married. You talked about, you know, a Black woman walks alone even as a married woman. Some of us are single.
Why did you point at me?
Because me and you, girl.
I have a fantastic life. Why would I ruin it with a man?
But really, it is. I just wonder, as a single woman, I've not been married, I don't have children, and sometimes it does feel like I look to my counterparts and I feel like I'm walking alone. So I was very struck when you said, as a married woman, the Black woman walks alone.
My husband is a very supportive person. He's also a very positive person. You know, and when you are, the patriarchy serves men. It just does. And we stand at the corner of misogynoir. I mean, that's what it is, you know? And there are certain things that he can understand as a Black man, but he has, my husband has access to tools to defeat racism and to disarm white people and white supremacy that I simply don't have. I do not have access. And if I try to pick up his tools, I have a very different outcome than he has. And the only thing that I have been able to hone, and I'm sure we can all agree to this, is to be overly articulate. When I come home, as loving as he is and as wonderful as he is and as much as he understands racism, he also is like, well, did you just smile? And I'm like, I can't, I don't have big old pecs and muscles and biceps and I can't just flash that, you know, smile. And it just disarms people because there is a There is a wanting there for him that is not there.
A desire.
For me. A desire. And a desire to be close to him.
But I feel like we also do absorb and internalize the racism that Black men receive that we are in relationships with. You know, because I had a husband that, you know, he, Tiffany knows him as bald now, but he used to have long dreads and used to face like direct racism from hair. We talked about hair earlier of being somebody with dreads who people were like, oh, I think I'm nervous to be in an edit room with you. But then you get in there like, oh, he's so nice. But, you know, he had to prove that he's nice.
What do you think he's going to do?
But the thing is, we'll do. We do get the double, right? So, I mean, Black men have a certain...
We want to comfort them.
We want to comfort them. And so we're dealing with their racism and our own.
Right. We understand. We want to be your partner.
That's right.
And I don't know, sometimes it feels like that we are partnerless, you know, in every aspect, not just dating and romance, but in the struggle sometimes, you know, it's just, I don't know. It feels like black men, not all, you all have wonderful husbands around this table, but some black men can be dismissive of our pain, of our lived experience. They can value anything that does not look like us. Yeah. Even they're taught that from society.
Mm-hmm. Right, exactly.
And they're taught that from a very early age. And every...
To want a Barbie.
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And it's wild because all of... Most of my friends are single, successful, educated, beautiful black women, and they are all going to be raising a family alone if that's what they choose to do, or be without one.
Yeah. Where people are like, oh, well, all you do is go after black men. Your whole agenda is to go after black men. And I'm like, because I want to protect black women does not mean that I want to automatically go after, whatever that means, after black men. But we do have to talk about what's happening between black men and black women. Mm-hmm. But we should do that from a place of love. Like, I love black men.
Absolutely.
Right? I love and adore black men. But that means we still have to look at the reality that black women have the second highest rate of experiences with sexual violence in this country. I feel like sometimes we need to close the curtain and have a private conversation.
I think as women, especially as women of color, we have that superwoman cape on.
Mm-hmm. All the time.
And we forget that it's okay to take the cape off.
Yeah.
Ladies, this meal has been amazing. I do want to welcome back Melba.
Okay, hi, ladies. How are you?
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Oh, queen. So good, Melba.
Oh, my gosh. And everything is dietary. It's diet-free. No calories.
There's no calories.
Not one.
Not one.
But since we have you here, Miss Melba, we want to just talk about self-care. You running this incredible business. I mean, you're not jumping to a whole second restaurant here in this other place of Minton. But, I mean, talk about that a little bit. How do you find the time? You are a mom.
Yeah. You know, Joy, you're 100% right. And I think as women, we are natural caregivers. But we always put ourselves last.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You know, so the first two letters in my name is M-E, me.
Yeah.
They should be the last two letters in my name because I've often forgot about me. Mm-hmm. But one thing that time has taught me and that sisterhood has taught me, that we've got to put us first. Because when we put us first, we're better able to take care of our husbands, of our wives, of our kids, of our families, and of our friends. And when you talk about breaking bread together, that's what it means. Mm-hmm. It means to feed ourselves, to take that loaf, and before we feed anybody else, let's feed ourselves.
That's such good advice. That's something that I think we find it hard to do. Tamika, I know you just got this big role, a huge role. You're a wife and a mother. And so I'm curious, as you navigate all this, like, how do you prioritize self-care?
So I will say, honestly, it has always been a priority. So, you know, just like you said,
teach us, because
quite honestly, like, every time you get on the airplane, they tell you put your mask on first, right? Yeah. I realize that I can't do it if I'm not in a good place. Mm-hmm. I know when I'm at my peak. I know when it's too much. Mm-hmm. And I'll tell you, even now, I have focused on the wellness of our people within the MBPA because all we have to give is our intellectual capacity, right? And when we are at our capacity, we have nothing else to give. Mm-hmm. So it's really important to me that I'm replenishing that and that we're finding time for wellness, finding time for self so that we can give more. And I think people don't realize that. And we think we get this badge of honor that we have, you know, pulled an all-nighter or we haven't slept in 48 hours and all of those things.
Yeah, that's a good point because I think as women, especially as women of color, we have that superwoman cape on.
Mm-hmm. All the time.
And we forget that it's okay to take the cape off.
Yeah.
You know, it's okay. And it's not a sign of weakness when we take the cape off, right? Sometimes we just need to replenish, you know?
Yeah.
And I think it's okay not to always be strong.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I would say, though, I don't, you know, I used to say that joy is an act of resistance and, you know, they're coming for everything. Our civil rights, our civil liberties, our peace of mind, don't give them your joy, too. So joy is a necessary act of resistance. But now I'm like, don't we deserve just to be joyful just because?
Right.
I don't want us to feel like, you know, you should replenish and center wellness and your well-being so that you can be of greater utility.
Right.
Because that is, yes. you know, creating this hierarchy
right.
again where we are saying our labor is of greater value than our very life.
Amen. Wow.
So it is okay to be joyful just because.
Just
yeah.
because.
Yeah.
That's real.
Amen. Amen. Wow.
So true. Yeah.
Well, I have to say yes. to you, ladies, one of our methods of self-care on this weekend is you.
Yes.
Is being with you yes. and sharing with you and this sisterhood that we have that has been nourishing. It's been literally, physically.
Yes. Right? Yeah, we make yeah. you work. Work. Okay.
But it's also been spiritually nourishing. I mean, it's been intellectually nourishing. You women are brilliant. You are queens. You are fabulous. And I just want to thank all of you for being here at this table because this is a table of sisterhood and friendship. I think we should have a toast.
Yes. Well, can I just say one thing? I'm going to try not to get emotional. But
Too late.
Too late.
For so long, so many of us at this table have said, anybody sing a black girl song?
Oh, Tiffany, come on.
And you all sing that song.
Cheers.
So thank you.
We love you.
Cheers.
Cheers. Cheers. Here's to black women. The culture is black women.
From Freakonomics Radio, a new series about a role model we didn't know we needed.
So many crazy things really did happen to him.
The physicist Richard Feynman was one of the most brilliant scientists of his generation, but he was also a troublemaker, an obsessive, and a man who spoke truth to power. Along the way, he created a blueprint for how to lead a life of honest inquiry.
He was a brilliant theoretical physicist, but what really made him stand out was his humanity.
The curious, brilliant, vanishing Mr. Feynman on Freakonomics Radio.